time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, back once again to Fred Malone, and boy, this is a nice surprise that Fred came in today. Fred's been under the weather, kind of like I was for a while, and we're all together now. By George,
we're above ground, Charlie.
Yeah, right.
Really counts these days.
Oh,
my grandfather every morning when he got the Columbus Citizen's Journal or the Portsmouth Times, you always turn to the obits first. I said, Grandpa, why do you always look at the obits first? He said, I just want to make sure I'm not in there.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, so. My goodness. Yeah, you can find out by typing in various newspapers around the country who died, you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these newspapers, of course, have limited your access to their online.
That's right.
But usually the obits. You can still get.
Exactly.
You know, I don't take the Tiffin paper anymore. I don't take the Mohawk Leader anymore, but I usually keep track by just checking the Daily Chief Union's obituaries,
yeah, sure.
You know, or the Tribune.
And yeah. Telegraph Forum has Bucyrus obits, and the Marion Star has obits.
Yeah. So, and we don't take the paper, but my in-laws do, and they always save it for us. And I've become my grandfather. I keep saying that all the time because I have so many habits that are like him, and I'm sure it's because I was around him so much
sure.
when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But that's the first thing I look at now is the obituaries. Isn't that awful?
Well, that's the way with our family. And after we read the obituaries, we just throw the paper down.
Yeah, that's it. That's about all I care to see.
Right. Isn't that crazy? Boy. Yeah.
So, Charlie, there's nothing going on right now.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Well, the museum's closed for the season.
The
Heritage Hall, Marion County Historic Society, is closed down for the season. They will start changing out the exhibit in the atrium. We'll transition away from the 1969 exhibit that's in there now that hopefully everybody got a chance to see because
that was my era.
Yeah, it was a great exhibit. It really was. And we'll be transitioning the months of January, February, and the first portion of March into 1920.
Oh, really?
To celebrate the 100th anniversary Warren Harding's election as President of the United States. And, of course, a lot of things going on in 1920. We had Prohibition. We had the women got the right to vote. And,
Ku Klux Klan.
The KKK had a very big part.
They were marching within a block or so from Harding to speaking on the front porch.
Absolutely. So that's going to be the new exhibit in the main atrium starting when the museum opens. Well, actually, you can get a preview by coming to United Heritage Hall, which is always the last weekend in March. But we are closed now. But as I said earlier, if anybody's looking for a last-minute gift idea, especially if you've got people coming home for the holidays that haven't been in Marion for a while or grew up in Marion and would like to know a little bit about what's going on or what went on, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we've got Kensel's book available. And then Randy Wendland just wrote a new book on Crystal Lake Park. Which is very informative, very very nice work.
Yeah, for everybody who ever wanted to know anything at all about Crystal.
Oh, boy. Yep, it's there.
Yeah.
And he researched for a year this book. So there was a lot of time and effort went into it. And it's self-published, and all the proceeds from the sale of that book go to the Marion County Historical Society.
Great.
So all the profits stay right there. Randy takes nothing from it. So If you want a copy of that book or Kinsel's book or any other book that we have available, you can always stop at the museum Monday through Friday and just ring the bell there on the State Street side, and they will be more than happy to accommodate you. Now, they will be closing down for Christmas on the 21st, which is, what, next Monday?
Yeah.
So you've only got today, tomorrow, and Friday before Christmas. So if you want a book or something, get in there now. Yeah. And that's really what we've concentrated on in the bookstore now, or in the bookstore. In the gift shop is mainly books. Okay. Because that seemed to be where people's interest lies.
I would think so, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And again, like I said, they're especially nice for people that grew up in Marion and maybe haven't lived here for a number of years or don't live here anymore, but still want to find out, you know, a little bit about the history of the town they grew up in.
I would like to see a book written there. Now, two books have been written about Bucyrus under not the correct name. But you know who they were talking about.
Oh, sure,
about.
Right, absolutely.
And my goodness. Yeah. And one of them, let's see, it talks about my era when we used to take scrap paper for the war.
Oh, for the war effort.
Down to a junkyard, and then we would take parts and pieces of their junkyard and then take them home and then bring them back and collect money.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Good way to turn a profit.
Yeah.
Well, you'll remember Trish Valentine.
Yes.
Who had the newspaper called Zigzag, which I absolutely loved.
Is she gone now?
Yeah. She works for St. Francis Home. She does their Earth program up there now.
Oh,
and has been for quite a while. And I don't think Zigzag exists anymore. But Trish wrote a number of books about the Tiffin area.
Really?
She did one on the orphanage.
Yeah.
United Mechanics. I forget the exact letters of it. But if you say the old orphanage in Tiffin, everybody knows what you're talking about. She wrote one about Little Italy. She wrote one about the Red Light District. There were several of them that she wrote about.
A lot of that's been written about Bucyrus, too.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And there was quite a red light district in Bucyrus, too, by the train tracks.
It was
the train tracks.
Everywhere, yes. In fact, on the mural downtown, on the if you look at it on the square, there's a red arrow. And people say, what on earth is that red arrow? Yeah. Well, that points to the red light district along the railroad tracks.
Yep.
Yeah. These two
located by the railroad.
Yeah,
tracks.
Right. And
what was the one madam's name that was so popular over there?
Adam Barzicki.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, He was the editor of the Telegraph Forum.
Yeah.
And then there was another guy that wrote a consternation news every week or every year for the Michigan game.
Okay.
He would publish it in great numbers. It would say, Michigan blasts Ohio State. And you know, it was everything was the opposite of what it really...
And probably upset a lot of people in the process.
Yeah. A lot of people forgot it was all in jest.
We know when you're talking about the book that were written using pseudonyms. Reminds me of Sherwin Anderson when he wrote Winesburg, Ohio, Clyde,
right,
and how people got so upset because they knew who he was talking about in the book, but he changed the names to protect the innocent.
Yeah, isn't that something? My dad grew up in Clyde and used to be one of the kids that messed with the cannonballs from General McClellan.
No, not McClellan, McPherson.
Yeah, McPherson, yes, yes.
McPherson, yes.
Oh, boy. So what's happening otherwise?
Well, as I said, you know, nothing going on here at Marion County. We wrapped up the year with our annual meeting on December the 7th. Nothing spectacular there. And again, we'll open again for a preview of the new exhibit on the last weekend of March when we do Night at Heritage Hall, and that's always on the last Friday and Saturday of the month. More about that, you know, when we get into the new year. Currently up in Sycamore, the Mohawk Historical Society is, of course, closed for the season as well. And the new building is proceeding. I haven't talked to Kim for a few weeks, but the last time I talked to him, the walls were up and they were ready to put it under roof. So I'm sure it's been all buttoned up and the inside work has started now.
That's on the south side of the current museum?
On the north side.
North. Oh, okay.
You'll recall we had two buildings, side by side that we had a connecting door in.
Right.
And those, of course, were all remodeled here a couple of years ago when we had the water damage, the problem. Then we bought the building immediately to the north of us, which had actually been condemned a few years ago. And that was the old Stahlsmith building. And we tore that down this past spring, and that's where our new building is being built. That building will resemble a late 1890s, 1880s, 1890s livery stable with an automatic door that can be raised so that we can take large objects in and out for the museum.
So do you know any of the demands the state puts forth for a public building?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah. That was one of the reasons why it took a while to get going, was to get all the proper permits and all the approvals from the state before we could actually build the building. And because there was some reason why we couldn't have a public access to that building through the front. So we had to make our access going from our existing building into the building on the inside.
Interesting.
For some reason, I don't remember. Kim told me, but I don't remember. But that should all be done and be completed by late spring. So we'll be able to open up the whole works by then. And, of course, no programs going on right now at the Opera House over in Melmore. That's all. You know, everything's closed down pretty much for the wintertime, and those will start again come early summer. So,
yeah, you know, on the basis of what the state demands, I keep wondering about the old cigar store downtown.
Yeah.
And are they being held up by the state?
They must be.
I would think so.
They must be, because I know that we had some issues that were a problem for us, and this was a new building we were building, not an old building that was being refurbished. So if we had some issues there, I'm sure that there's probably some things being held up through the, and I don't know what department that goes through with the state, but I'm sure that
there is a department. I know when at Heritage Hall, when Jack Telfer put in the stairway leading to the basement,
from the atrium,
which never existed before,
right.
We got dinged mightily by the state.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
But that's the way
So that's kind of where we are with Mohawk. Again, you can belong to the Mohawk Historical Society for $10 a year, and you get six wonderful newsletters throughout the year.
Yeah, that's great.
It's absolutely fabulous, and a lot of times there's a lot of articles in there and these are articles that Kim gleans from all the area newspapers from the early 1800s clear up until the 1950s, 1960s now. And a lot of times there's articles in there that are pertinent to Marion and Northern Marion County and some of our area. But it takes in the entire Mohawk School District, so we're talking three counties there basically. But if you're over 80, you can get your membership for free.
Yeah, that's great. Now,
And it's only $10 a year, even if you're not.
Kim must spend most of his day, every day, researching stories.
He is an amazing historian for the Mohawk School District in that area. I don't think there's a subject that you can stump him on. And he really thoroughly enjoys it. He bought, do you remember Kenny Ankeny?
Yes.
That Ankeny Electric there in Sycamore. Kenny lived just down the street from me on 8th Street there in Sycamore. And Kenny had a huge building that he built a number of years ago that was just full of all kinds of antiques. And the basement of the house was completely redone. So Kim has one whole enormous room in his basement dedicated to the Sycamore Grasshoppers vintage baseball team.
Oh, really?
A lot of the things that we had no room for in the museum are now located there. And, of course, you could see that by calling Kim. But his basement is absolutely fantastic. So he spends a lot of time down there working on the newsletter. Okay.
This is the worst Christmas party ever.
Why? We have the trees, the eggnog, the fruitcake, and presents under the tree.
But you forgot to invite the other guests. It's just you and me.
I knew I forgot something, but that just means more eggnog for me.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Okay. We're back once again with Fred Malone and talking about things of the past and things of the present. Things of the present that you might be interested in, too. Okay, so now the Mohawk Historical Society has that new building under construction. And when are your hours normally?
Well, normally when the museum gets opened again, if Kim keeps the same hours, we were always open from 10 in the morning till 2 on Saturdays.
Yeah, okay.
Every Saturday. So now I'm not sure whether he'll change that or whether he'll keep it the same. It's the same problem everywhere, Charlie. Enough volunteers right?
Yes.
Because nobody gets paid.
Yeah.
For what we do up there, it's all volunteers. So it just and our membership, unfortunately, is aging, like yeah. everybody else's.
That's right.
And it seems like it's always the same group of people that do all the work.
When I look at that list of memoriams,
oh, I know it grows all the time.
Frightening, yeah,
it is. And you know, we have members in over 42 states in the union.
Something. Yeah.
So we have a huge membership. Our membership is over 600 people.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are not in the area anymore.
Sure.
And, you know, we're just like everybody else. People in their late 60s and early 70s are the youngest people in the group.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need more members 20, 30, 40 years old, just like everybody else. It's the same thing with the Marion County Historical Society. Our membership is aging and our volunteer base is aging as well. But anyway, we should be ready to open. Hopefully everything will be ready to open. All three of the buildings will be ready to open come spring or at least early summer. And if he doesn't change, it'll go back to 10 to 2.
I remember when I was president of the Marion County Historical Society, there were a group of ladies, and I think they're all dead now, that did most of the work to begin with.
Yeah.
And, of course, you had to follow their...
Absolutely. Follow their lead, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing I like about the way the museum has been run, even since I was president, before I took over as president, that's been 6, 7, 8 years now.
That long now?
Gail Martin started the process of changing the main exhibit in the atrium. Because,
right.
You know, for a long, long time, nothing changed
right.
in the museum.
Sure.
And I think that had a really big effect on the people that came to see the museum because, you know, they went, I've been there, you know, there's nothing new to see. But
that's
now,
right.
Every year when we close down through the winter, you get a new exhibit in the atrium, and that should bring
that
people in because it
yeah.
changes all the time. And like I said, coming in March of 2020, we're going to be featuring the 1920s with Harding's election and everything that was taking place in Marion in 1920. So there's going to be a lot to see. And eventually, whenever Mary Ellen is ready, we'll be bringing Mary Ellen's museum from Primrose
right.
over to Heritage Hall.
How are you getting donations for that?
We're right in the process now of pushing. We got a matching grant from I believe it was from the Ohio Arts Council. We've got a couple of different matching
yeah,
grants
right.
going right now. But I think the one that involves Mary Ellen, I think it's a $10,000 grant, but we have to match it.
Okay.
So we have to raise our $10,000 first.
Oh, all right.
And then we'll get the $10,000 from the Ohio Arts
Good.
Council. So if you're interested, we're going to be doing a general mailer to our membership here probably within the next few weeks. But if you are listening and are interested, you can go on our website. There's information on there about that matching grant, and you can participate in helping us get that oral history of Mary Ellen's experiences through her life and be a part of that exhibit that's going to be coming in the future.
Great. Now, where would that exhibit, knowing you're crowded, where are you going to be able to put that exhibit?
Well, right now, since the new Harding Center is going to be opening in the spring, we're thinking about taking one of the rooms in our Harding rooms downstairs.
I was thinking, yeah.
And making that Mary Ellen's exhibit.
That's good.
Because we really won't need two rooms of Harding memorabilia.
That's right.
We'll probably be loaning some of our things to the new Harding Center. Yeah. I know that discussion has been had. So we're going to take one of those rooms and turn that into Mary Ellen Withrow room.
All right.
Right.
Very good.
I think that's pretty much the decision that was made, right?
Yeah, because space is so limited.
It is. It is. You know, and I know you've told me several times you were a part of that transition when they bought that building, and there were a number of the older membership that probably thought, why are they buying that huge building?
One of them said, all we need is another museum in Marion.
Yeah, well, we're out of space. You know, we've got close to 40,000 items in our archives, Charlie. Close to 40,000. Think of that.
So now tell me, what happened to Stengel True? Is that still a museum?
Well, it is. It is, but it's one of those deals where there aren't any basic hours for it. Now, you're talking about on the hill or across the street from us?
On the hill.
Okay. That's what I refer to as Stengel True, and then across the street is just True. You can stop in during their regular office hours out there for the Marion Community Foundation. And they'll give you a tour if they're available. Somebody will show you around. But they really don't have any set hours.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that there's as much there as there used to be. But you can still get a tour of the house.
Yeah.
Now, across the street, it's a hit or miss.
At Henry Cruz Home.
Yeah, and you almost have to call and make an appointment, and you probably will need a fairly good-sized group.
I would think, yeah.
We had some conversations at one time with them about the possibility of us opening it one day a month or 2 days a month and running it with our volunteers, and I think those kind of fell apart. I'd like to see that conversation started again because it's a fantastic place.
It is.
And it's like a giant time capsule in there.
Yeah, I like their toys.
Oh, well, you know, it's just like you stepped into the 1860s and they went on vacation and you stopped by to visit because everything is there. I mean, there are still clothes in the drawers. Photographs on the tables. Yeah. I mean, it's just an absolutely fantastic
what
place.
What I like, too, is you go to the front door and you pull on the cable and it rings a bell in there.
Right, exactly.
And no electric, of course.
No. But, you know, those things all take volunteers. Again, it comes down to volunteers. And there just aren't that many people that are willing to give up their time these days to do those kind of things.
Yeah.
So. But moving on, little bits of things, of course, to be taking place over at Malabar. We do have our new 2020 event schedule is out now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically January, there's not too much of anything going, although the park is always open. The park is open 365 days a year from dusk till dawn. Of course, we have bridle trails there. We have hiking trails there.
Do they have state people helping?
There's always people at the visitor center Monday through Friday. I think even there's some weekend hours. They're abbreviated somewhat January, February. But our main events won't start until February the 8th. And that's our winter hike for health, which is actually sponsored by the Richland Public Health Division. And again, that's free. And we'll talk more about that in January when I come back. But I did want to mention the Big House Valentine's Bash that we've been doing now. I think this is our fifth year of doing this. This is where you can experience what it would have been like to have had a dinner in the Big House.
Uh-huh.
We have a 5-course catered meal in the Big House. We do one seating on Friday, February the 14th, which is Valentine's Day, at 6 o'clock. Then we do two seatings on Saturday on the 15th at 4 and 7, and then one seating on Sunday at 2. And the ticket includes a guided tour of the house 1 hour before the show. Now there is entertainment going on presented by a group called Just Jazz. In fact, they just had them out at the Senior Center here in Marion last week for the senior prom. But we've used them the last couple of years, and they're very, very good. They do selections from what they call the Great American Songbooks, songs from the 40s and 50s, popular songs. And the meal is catered by One of our board members on the foundation has a catering business and also has 7 or 8 franchises, Annie M. Pretzels.
Wow.
So he's a pretty busy guy.
Yeah.
But he does a great 5-course meal. And then we always have reenactors. I've usually got Lloyd Brumfield there, and I've got, well, this year I'll have Groucho Marx will be there.
Oh, really?
To entertain you.
That'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got F. Scott Fitzgerald's going to be attending this year, so you have a chance to see him. And Ernest Hemingway will be there as well. So we'll have a couple of American authors there that were friends of Louis Brumfield. So that'll be coming up in February, and I'll talk more about that in January. And if you're interested in that, I will say tickets usually sell out pretty fast.
No kidding.
So when I come back in January, I'll be giving you more information about that. But you can always go on the website and get information, and that's MalabarFarm.org. But basically, things are pretty quiet over at the farm right now. Of course, we've got at the working farm, we've got about 55, 60 head of cattle. We had a very good year for calves this year. I think we had over 20 head of calves born this year. And we do still sell meat, fresh meat there that's raised right there on the farm. And you can get that at the visitor center. We have some packaged meats there available all the time. And we're planning on getting a flock of chickens back in the spring, so we'll have eggs available again.
Some free-range chickens.
And we just got a couple of head of hogs, so we'll probably have some pork available too sometime in the spring.
That's good. Yeah.
So starting to get more farm livestock.
Yeah,
more so than what we've had in the past.
Good use of that. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's
absolutely.
That's good.
I keep asking if they'll get a couple of dairy cows. You know, when Louis was there, dairy was a big concern.
Yeah, that's right.
They milked quite a few head of cows. But they've told me on a couple of occasions, unless I want to come over twice a day and do the milking, they're not going to do that.
You know, the out east of Marion, the Manti farm, dairy farm
right.
is all gone.
Yep, right.
And the milk business is terrible.
It is. It really is. Well, and of course, here in Marion County, we have that big carousel.
Yeah, that's
going very well, of course. And that's a foreign operation,
I think.
From what?
From up in the
Scandinavian area.
Sweden
or Denmark, one of those areas. But I've actually been out there to see that. That's quite an operation.
It's all good.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
have facilities, too. It seems like in Michigan, too.
Yeah, I think somebody told me that, but it's very fascinating. It's like a – I'm checking to see when our next break is coming
yeah,
here.
Yeah, another minute.
It's fascinating because it's like a giant merry-go-round, and as a cow steps on, he starts around, and the next one gets on. By the time he steps off, they're done.
Wow. Now,
so
tell
it's like
me,
a continuous thing.
Do the milk with the teats – attach themselves or not?
I can't remember. I don't remember whether someone was physically there putting them on or whether they automatically connected. I don't remember.
Yeah, it seems
I haven't been out there for about 3 years. I
often wonder, it'd be kind of hard to be automatic, but nowadays you never know.
Yeah, it's real close to Richard's place. It's not very far from
his place. Is it right?
Yeah, yeah. It's not too far from where he lives. So, fascinating. And I guess there's more than just what's here in Ohio. Like you said, there's one in Michigan, and I'm sure there's some elsewhere, too, in the United States.
What can you do if you want to look at that facility?
Well, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. You need to get directions to it. I think what we did the day we went out, Dick actually took me out. We just drove up there and got out of the car and looked.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, nobody ran us off.
Yeah, great. That is something, and you often wonder who... With that many cows, what do they do with the leftovers?
Well, I would imagine that it's being marketed because, you
it
know,
must be, yes.
all byproducts these days are pretty much used.
Yeah, right.
So, and, of course, as Louis said, you know, best to put it back in the ground. That's where it belonged.
Yeah, right. Okay, we're going to break here and be back shortly Fred Malone.
Silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling, hear them ring. Scott, it will be Christmas Day.
What a great Christmas song.
And a reminder, and don't you forget it, Scott, I'll be looking under the tree for your gift.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Okay, back once again, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Marietta. And I never will forget, I was promoting Marion at the big convention center in Cleveland some years ago. And I had dinner with two guys that run the pasta company down there. I can't remember the name of it. But they produce all kinds of pasta. But there's some area down there that I've heard a word called Campus Martius. What on earth is that?
Well, I can't remember the actual definition. It's French, and
yeah,
I can't
okay.
remember the actual translation of it. But Campus Martius was actually the first fort that was built
really?
in Marietta, and it consisted of four blockhouses, one on each corner,
yeah.
and then it was all enclosed because at that time, we're talking the 1780s, when that area was beginning to be civilized, so to
yeah.
speak, there were a number of Indians from various tribes. You had the Wyandots, you had the Delawares, you had the Hurons, the Senecas, the Potawatomis. There were a lot of various tribes that settled
yes.
in that area
yes.
and ran all the way up to the Scioto River. Actually ran all the way to Lake Erie because it was all part of the Northwest Territory. And they were still, of course, savages. And so they built this Campus Martius as a fort to protect these people that were starting to civilize the area.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can visit Campus Martius. The museum is still there. And Rufus Putnam, who was the original
yes.
President of the Ohio Company,
yes.
which was sent there by George Washington to take care of the land bank, so to speak, that was his house. And it's actually still in the museum.
We have
someone
Terry.
Has a translation.
Yeah, here's Terry.
Yes, you want the translation?
Yes, the French translation.
It's Latin. Well, it's Latin.
Latin.
Field of Mars.
Okay, there you go. Field of
Mars. Field of Mars.
Field of Mars.
So the Campus Martius was a publicly owned area of ancient Rome, about 2 square kilometers, 490 acres in extent. In the Middle Ages, it was the most populous area of Rome. So they took that and applied it to what you're talking about,
right.
most likely.
Right. That was the public area and the public, and they built houses within the walls of the fort to protect the people from the Indians that were inhabiting the area at the time. You know. Thank you, Terry.
So I wonder if the popular candy there is a Mars bar.
Don't know.
I'm sure it is.
Don't
yes.
know.
Oh,
don't
okay.
know. Thanks.
All right. Now, there's another thing, and I was going to mention that first of all. Channel 10.5 is a new subchannel, Channel 10. But if you've got cable, you don't get it.
No, I don't.
But now here, they cover everything in life. They cover robotics heavily
huh.
and show the operation of various industries and their use of robotics, and from making candy to steel and aluminum products, it out of this world.
Interesting.
They also have an aviation program, and they have a program showing the lumberjacks, and a big program on Alaskan gold the machines.
Right. Right, where they're mining for the gold.
Sluices
right.
that...
Right.
And it's amazing to see, and they still use that old pan to hold the gold in.
Really?
And you'll see a whole pan full of gold.
Nuggets, little flecks
yes.
of gold and
oh,
so forth.
Oh, my land.
That's interesting.
That's the most interesting channel on Earth. The only thing is they run the same commercials so often.
You get sick of seeing the same thing.
Well,
over
you
and
do,
over again.
Yes. Yeah. But nevertheless, the information acquired from that, yesterday they showed the sound break, the barrier, sound breaking the sound barrier. Uh-huh. And here's the thing. I was in Cleveland at the air show a few years ago, and a guy by the name of Bob Hoover, who was known for his Panama hat he wore, and I didn't know anything then except that he was a very famous pilot. Well, in this program yesterday, Bob Hoover was a backup for the guy that broke the sound barrier. And Hoover was a contributed so much to the whole aviation industry, and I got to see him. His main thing, he could loop a overhead wing plane.
Wow.
A big one.
Wow.
And
quite a trick.
Yeah, everybody just their mouths wide open.
Oh, yeah.
That was Bob Hoover, and I didn't realize then all of his importance to aviation, but it was tremendous.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah, remember the Bell, plane called the Bell, I don't think it's called the, one of them, X-1 or something like that, and breaking the sound barrier and all they had to contend with.
Wow.
It's
amazing.
This 10.5, if you could ever get an auxiliary antenna to pick that up, it's well worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, my land.
Wow. Well, you were talking about what the main thing in Marietta. I learned this when we were down there this summer. We spent 4 days down there, stayed at the Lafayette Hotel. There's your phone ringing.
Yes, caller, go ahead.
Yeah, it was Chuck Yeager.
Chuck Yeager, yeah.
Yes, Chuck Yeager, yeah.
Yep, there you go.
And Hoover, they were buddies.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't know how true it was, but apparently if everything in the right stuff is somewhat accurate, Yeager cracked some ribs while riding the Happy Bottom.
That's right, he did. They taped him up. Mm-hmm. Taped him up and said, go ahead.
Huh.
And then did you see that really the real, you know, everybody looks at Amelia Earhart, but there was, they called her Poncho, I can't remember her name, Poncho Barnes did a lot more than what Amelia Earhart did, but she was only the kind of child a mother could love,
that's
for money. And she got around and did a lot of flying and a lot of things in aviation, but Amelia Earhart, because she looked better than her, Amelia got all of
made, made a little favorite. Better appearance, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. But that's something. I wish I could remember her name, but her last name was Barnes. And she got Poncho, the nickname, because she ended up flying, unbeknownst to her, arms. The Poncho Villa.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that channel is something else. Modern marvels,
sure,
and all the other things. So it behooves people to, if you really want to see something and learn something, turn into 10.5.
That's the one. And I'm just happy that I saw Bob Hoover in person flying in Cleveland.
Huh.
Oh wow!
Was that up at the old Burke's Lakefront?
Yeah, Burke's Lakefront Airport.
Yep. Yeah, and Chuck Yeager does make appearances still. I think he's 95 or 6, somewhere around in there.
Yeah.
And it's $10,000 an appearance.
Wow.
Yeah,
so.
Very good.
But
okay.
Anyway, okay, bye.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Fred, if you could get an auxiliary antenna of some kind, it'd be well worth it. You'd learn.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe rabbit ears maybe could pick it up.
Yeah.
It's possible.
The one thing, too, it showed in making candy, it showed them making Tootsie Rolls.
Oh, yeah, I heard you talking about that the other day.
And this candy with the stripes, you know, and the round things, and they lay out these long strips, and the machine goes down and wraps them around, and they end up with those, what we see on the market.
Well, when we were in Marietta this summer, we took a trolley tour of the city, you know, a historic tour of the
right.
city. And they went by, of course, they went by some of the old mansions that were built in the early 1800s and talking about all the various people. And they went by this one that was a fairly new mansion that was built maybe 20 years ago, but it was built to look like something from the 1800s.
Yeah.
And the guy, as we were taking the tour, he'd say, well, now this mansion was built with money from shipping or boat building or whatever the case might be. And this modern mansion was built by the man that owns a manufacturing plant here in Marietta that manufactures refrigerator magnets.
Oh.
Marietta is a refrigerator magnet capital of the world.
Well, I'll be doggone.
I never knew that.
No.
So all these refrigerator magnets that you see were made in Marietta.
And it's amazing, too. I used to think that refrigerators were all aluminum, but no. Steel.
Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
So that was that's one of their main industries now is making refrigerator magnets.
Our refrigerator is full of pictures.
Oh, yes. You know, when you go on a trip someplace, you always want to bring some kind of a souvenir home. And we found years ago that the best thing to buy is a refrigerator magnet because it doesn't take up much space.
That's right. They're flat.
Yeah, they're flat. And you can stick them on a refrigerator and you got your souvenir and it doesn't take up much space. And usually they're not that expensive.
That's right.
But I did not know that Marietta was the refrigerator magnet capital.
Most of our people didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I'll be gone.
But what a great, interesting place. I picked up when we went through Campus Martius Museum, which I've been through about 30 years ago. We went through it when we were down there this summer, and I picked up this book called Pioneer History, an account of the first examinations of the Ohio Valley and the earliest settlement of the Northwest Territory. Now, Ohio was considered the Northwest Territory.
Yes.
And Marietta eventually became the first established settlement in the Northwest Territory. And this book was first published in 1848. And this is a reprint, obviously, of it. But it was diaries of a gentleman by the name of Hildreth, who was one of the early founders, one of the first settlers in Marietta.
Yeah.
Fascinating book. I have learned so much about the early days of Ohio and the Northwest Territory and the southeast quarter of Ohio by reading this. And I'm not quite through with it yet, but very fascinating because it talks about all the early people that settled that area. And to this day, a lot of the ancestors of those people are still living in Marietta in the
isn't
area.
That something? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I rode my bicycle to Marietta. I will never forget that. So, along
course,
with all.
Yeah, and the name you hear of all the time is Rufus Putnam because he was the president of the Ohio Company, which was the company that was responsible for surveying and getting all these properties set ready for settlers to come in and acquire.
Yeah, I remember seeing a limestone block somewhere that said, here is where George Washington surveyed.
Well, he did do a lot of survey work along the Ohio River.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, he wasn't president when they signed the Constitution, was he?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No. He was a commanding general still of the Continental Army.
That's right, yeah.
But he was not president, no.
Interesting when you... and then I saw a feature on that B1 or B5 of how the states were separated, how they were formed.
Yeah.
And that's mostly religion.
That's very interesting, yes.
Religion created all these.
Well, the interesting thing about Marietta, because most of the people that came to settle Marietta were from the northeastern part of the country, so it has a very New England feel to it, the way the town is laid out.
Somebody's calling. Yes, caller, go ahead. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, are you still advertising today, dear?
Is what?
Are you still advertising today, dear?
Advertising.
Oh, you mean swap shop?
Swap shop.
Yes.
No, you're about a day late, or day late. It'll be on tomorrow at 12:15.
12:15 tomorrow, you take calls.
That's right. Yes.
Huh?
Okay. Well, that's life.
Yeah, we're about done, aren't we?
It's 10:59 right now. Yeah, we got about 45 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Charlie, I'll be back and see you on the third Wednesday of January, barring any sicknesses, either one of us.
And hopefully Glenn Coble will have somebody call him on Swap Shop
tomorrow.
There you
go,
12:15. Yeah. Well, take good care of yourself, friend.
You do the same, Charlie.
Yeah, we'll try.
Happy holidays to everybody that's listening.
Right.
I hope everyone has a safe, happy holiday.
All right. Okay. It's 12 noon, and we'll see you later.
Your